the U.S. House of Representatives moves to once again impeach President Trump, this time on charges of inciting his supporters to storm the Capitol. The Iranian Navy launches its largest and domestically built military vessel during a maritime missile drill. And Italy's government is on the verge of collapse as former Prime Minister Matteo Renzi threatens to pull his party out of the ruling coalition. Thanks for joining us. The U.S. House of Representatives is debating whether to impeach Donald Trump, making him the first president in the country's history to face impeachment twice. Impeachment over the charge of inciting insurrection on the Capitol is expected to pass the Democratic-held lower chamber of Congress. At least five Republicans have signaled their support for the motion as well. The vote comes one day after the House voted in favor of a resolution urging Vice President Mike Pence to invoke Constitution's 25th Amendment and to strip Trump of his powers. Pence refused to comply, arguing that the move is not in the best interest of the United States. Donald Trump has faced backlash since his supporters stormed the Capitol building last Wednesday. Five people died in the violent riots, including a law enforcement officer. International lawyer Edward Corrigan says that the U.S. House will definitely pass the impeachment vote against President Trump.
Well, I think the impeachment vote will definitely pass at the House of Representatives because the Democrats have a narrow majority there, but there's an indication of a number of Republicans that are going to join them. The Senate, the Republicans still have a majority until there's the transfer of power on January 20th, and then it'll be tied, and then Vice President will have the tie-breaking vote. But there's some people, one senator for Alaska, Lisa Macrosky, said that she doesn't see herself as a Republican under the Trump administration. And Trump really has a cult, and he has done a tremendous amount of damage. And he's trying to just, you know, sort of have a total reign of destruction for the last couple of weeks of his power. And this is unprecedented. People were afraid that Richard Nixon might break before he resigned with the impeachment thing with Watergate and whatever.
Right.
But he did resign. He was pressured into that. Mm-hmm. But people were afraid that he was becoming mentally unstable. And I think the same concerns actually are even larger with Donald Trump.
The U.S. National Guard troops deployed on the streets of the capital, Washington, D.C., have been allowed to carry weapons. The Guard soldiers were also authorized to make arrests if the situation got out of hand. That's according to the Pentagon National Guard Bureau Chief. Daniel Hokanson, however, said that it would be a last resort. U.S. officials are boosting security ahead of the inauguration of Joe Biden as president on January 20th. It comes in the wake of the last week breach of Congress by supporters of President Donald Trump. Five people were killed as a result. The FBI has warned of armed protests at all 50 state capitals and in Washington before Inauguration Day. A prominent human rights organization says the U.S. president-elect Joe Biden should allow the prosecution of his predecessor Donald Trump for alleged crimes.
For Biden, the big question is prosecution. And our message to Biden is to not repeat Obama's mistake of looking forward, not back. That's what Obama said with respect to Bush torture. And as a result, left torture is a policy option rather than a despicable crime. Biden needs to allow professional prosecutors to go forward and to prosecute whatever crimes took place.
Roth also said Biden, after taking office, should not stand in the way of professional prosecutors wanting to hold Trump accountable for crimes. The HRW executive director also underlined that Trump has been a disaster for human rights, both in the U.S. and abroad, during his tenure as president. The remarks follow an annual HRW report over rights abuses around the world. The report was published just days after Trump's supporters carried out a deadly siege of the U.S. Congress. Biden is scheduled to be sworn in as the 46th president of the U.S. on January 20th. The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump has come up with fresh anti-Iran sanctions just days before President-elect Joe Biden takes office on January 20th. The U.S. Treasury Department has targeted 3 Iranian individuals and 16 entities. The sanctions toe the line of Washington's so-called maximum pressure campaign Trump launched against Iran after pulling out of the 2015 nuclear deal in 2018. Iran has called U.S. sanctions economic terrorism. Tehran also says the sanctions amount to medical terrorism since they hamper efforts to have access to medicines and medical equipment amid the coronavirus pandemic. Another show of might for the Islamic Republic, the Navy of the country has unveiled 2 new strategic vessels that play an important role in enhancing Tehran's defense capabilities. Correspondent Houman Abedi has traveled to the south to see what's going on there.
Iran's Navy has unveiled the country's largest military vessel called Makran. It is a mobile base that can carry choppers and support the military frigates of the Iranian Army's Navy. This 228-meter auxiliary ship was in fact a trade ship, but the Army changed it basically to turn into a floating port capable of carrying up to 82,000 tons of warships' needs. The support ship can also carry 5 helicopters and a battalion. It can travel for 1,000 days without having access to ports. Zereh was the other vessel unveiled by the Navy in the presence of top commanders.
The Iranian frigate called Zereh or Armor is an extremely useful vessel. It is very fast and powerful and can carry out its missions very well. It is equipped with advanced radars and electronic warfare facilities. Zereh can play a great role in safeguarding Iran's national interests. As the frigate is a totally indigenous one, it shows that our experts have successfully bypassed the sanctions.
Zereh is a missile-launching frigate of 47 meters length that can move at a speed of 35 nautical miles. It can launch cruise missiles up to 300 kilometers. After joining these 2 vessels, some southern drills called Marine Power 99 were staged to check the readiness of the forces.
These drills were not on our agenda. The goal was to check the preparedness and quick reaction of our facilities and forces. Vessels, submarines, drones, coast-to-sea missiles were tested during this exercise, and they entered the marked danger zone extending over 600,000 kilometers.
The surface-to-surface cruise missiles, submarine and flight units of the Iranian Navy took part in the drills.
With these 2 vessels joining the Iranian Navy, the country's waters are safer than before, and a clear message is sent to Iran's enemies that they should never think of waging a war against the country. Houman Abedi, Konarak.
Senior advisor to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says that the U.S. must lift anti-Iran sanctions if it wants to return to the 2015 nuclear deal. Ali Akbar Velayati said the incoming U.S. administration should make up for past mistakes by removing the sanctions. He said this way the new American administration will prove that it is committed to its obligations under the Iran nuclear deal. The outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew his country from the accord in 2018, reimposing sanctions on Iran. Trump also launched a so-called maximum pressure campaign that has resulted in extra sanctions against Tehran. UN officials say the measures are directly targeting ordinary people. Iran's foreign minister says the Islamic Republic will pursue the case of the U.S. assassination of the country's top general, Qasem Soleimani, through courts in Iran and in Iraq. Mohammad Javad Zarif also touched upon an arrest warrant issued by an Iraqi court for President Donald Trump for ordering the assassination of senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. He said the verdict was issued in the wake of a follow-up by Iran's foreign ministry. The U.S. drone strike killed General Soleimani and Muhandis near Baghdad airport last January. Iran has requested the Interpol to arrest Trump and 47 other American officials identified as playing a role in Soleimani's murder. Saudi-led war in Yemen has left its biggest toll on children, the number of malnourished children in the Yemeni province of Hodeidah continues to grow amid the absence of international assistance in saving the children in the war-torn country. Our correspondent in Sana'a, Abdulatif Al-Washali, has more.
The Saudi atrocities against Yemeni children are endless. Hodeidah is one of the worst affected areas in Yemen. The children there suffer from life-threatening malnutrition. They are in dire need of assistance and medical treatment.
الحديدة هي لها نصيب الأسد من هذا الجانب. Hodeidah has a very high malnutrition burden for several reasons. The main reason is the aggression that has besieged the governorate and its coast, preventing fishermen from going to the sea and obtaining adequate food. Another reason is the rising unemployment. Here is the 3-year-old Saba struggling to survive. She has just got out of the intensive care unit.
The 3-year-old Saba is struggling to survive. She has just got out of the intensive care unit. The United Nations warned weeks ago that at least 98,000 Yemeni children were suffering from malnutrition at record high rates. However, despite the ongoing collapse of the health system in Yemen, there has yet been no international response.
There has been a noticeable increase in the number of malnutrition cases in the past 2 months. They exceed the hospital's capacity, where we only have 12 beds. We had to receive patients in other departments, such as the emergency department, and this affects the health of children and increases the number of deaths.
The health sector in Yemen has suffered a continuous deterioration amid the Saudi-led war in the country. Saudi-led coalitions of blockade has prevented the arrival of food and medicine to millions of Yemeni children and women. The Saudi-led coalition is not only targeting the Yemeni children with airstrikes, but also violates their most basic rights, such as access to food and medicine, in a clear breach of the international humanitarian law. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Al-Hudaydah.
Italy's government is on the verge of collapse as former Prime Minister Matteo Renzi has threatened to pull his party out of the ruling coalition. Renzi is due to announce his decision on withdrawing his Italia Viva party's two ministers during a press conference later today. Now, such a decision would cause political chaos that is already in a country that is already struggling with the coronavirus pandemic and a recession. Renzi is a critic of a recovery plan of the government of Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte. He has insisted Italy should get a loan from the EU to help recover its healthcare sector. Renzi's tiny centrist party is supporting the ruling coalition, led by the anti-establishment Five Star Movement and the center-left Democratic Party. Across Europe, the number of COVID-19 cases and deaths are soaring. The World Health Organization had predicted the winter months were going to be tough, but with new variants of the virus making it more transmissible and lockdown fatigue setting in, experts are urging vigilance. Bianca Rahimi reports.
The COVID-19 pandemic is taking thousands of lives every day, and families everywhere are struggling to find closure. No visitations before loved ones die, and new burial rituals are taking their toll. In parts of Greece, victims are being buried away from their loved ones in separate plots. In Italy and Germany, crematoriums are struggling to cope with the sheer number of grieving families and an overwhelming number of bodies. The dead must be handled with protective clothing and masks, and according to the head of this crematorium, the number of deaths this winter is 20 times any flu wave.
The crematorium is full, as you can see. The caskets are not only stacked one by one, but three times high. Here, in the memorial hall, there are also many deceased stored. We use all the space we have. From the quantity, you can see that there is simply an improbable mortality. Corona is real.
The World Health Organization predicted a tough winter, with the COVID-19 pandemic and flu season overlapping. But experts say this recent surge in cases and deaths is due in part to families mixing.
The number of contacts that individuals had and their families had increased significantly over the Christmas and New Year holiday. And that has had a direct impact on the exponential growth that you have seen in many countries. Some of the exponential growth we've seen in countries is almost vertical.
Several vaccines are now being administered across the globe. In Europe, rollouts got off to a shaky start, but are now picking up pace. In the UK, which was the first in the world to start inoculating the most vulnerable, 2.3 million Britons have already got the jab. But experts say it will take until autumn for everyone to get it.
This is an extremely serious moment for the country. And as good news as the vaccine is, it cannot be seen by any of us as a free pass to ignore the national guidance.
During this, the UK's third lockdown, the police are cracking down on people breaking the rules. The statistics show more people are out and about now than during the previous lockdowns, while hospitals cope with double the number of cases, as the new variant of the virus blazes through the population. Yanka Rahimi, London.
The World Health Organization says the COVID-19 variant, initially found in Britain, has now spread to 50 countries and territories. The UN health body also said that a similar strain identified in South Africa has now been found in 20 countries and areas. According to the WHO, the geographical spread of both variants was likely underestimated. The agency warned that people must expect more such variants with the growing pace of the coronavirus. According to British health officials, the variant is up to 70% more transmissible than earlier versions. So far, many nations worldwide have imposed travel bans on Britain to control the spread of the new strain. Daily COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. meanwhile have hit a new record with nearly 4,500 fatalities. According to data that was released by Johns Hopkins University, cumulative deaths in the world's worst-hit country have now surpassed 380,000. The average number of daily deaths in the past week has now surpassed the fatalities of the 9/11 attack. The U.S. has also so far registered more than 22.8 million cases of the virus. Over the past week, an average of nearly 249,000 new COVID-19 infections was reported every day. Vaccination is also underway in the country, but the government has come under criticism for the program's slow and sometimes chaotic process. The Japanese government has announced the expansion of a coronavirus state of emergency to 7 more regions as COVID-19 cases continue to surge across the country.
In addition to Tokyo and neighboring 3 prefectures, we continue to see tough situations in other regions. I believe you are all concerned. However, in order to turn around this adversity, this latest measure is indispensable.
Premier Suga added that the government will also tighten border restrictions and quarantine rules. The state of emergency now covers 11 of the country's 47 prefectures, including Osaka and Kyoto. Authorities imposed similar measures on the capital, Tokyo, and 3 other regions last week. The emergency will last until February 7th. Under the measure, restaurants will be closed by evening, while a curb will be placed on unnecessary outings by the residents. Japan's coronavirus outbreak remains relatively small, with almost 300,000 infections and over 4,100 deaths so far. However, hospitals in the worst affected areas are under heavy strain due to a sharp surge in cases during the winter. Palestinian refugees in the Gaza Strip have slammed UN cuts to aid and services provided to them. The majority of Gazans are refugees who were kicked out of their towns and villages upon the establishment of the Israeli regime in 1948. Ashraf Shannon has more.
Palestinian refugees demonstrated in the Gaza Strip against UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees. They protested the agency's cuts to vital services, aid, and employment. The UN agency provides education, health, and welfare services to millions of Palestinian refugees in the occupied West Bank, Jerusalem al-Quds, the Gaza Strip, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan. More than 1.3 million Palestinian refugees live in the Gaza Strip and rely on UNRWA aid to survive.
We will stand up against all the conspiracies targeting the Palestinian people and their cause. These cuts are part of the so-called deal of the century. As we stand here, we issue a strong warning to UNRWA against these cuts that aim to end the refugees' issues.
UNRWA is a United Nations agency established by the General Assembly decades ago and mandated to provide assistance to Palestinian refugees. According to UNRWA, there are over 5 million registered Palestinian refugees.
We are already suffering because of the Israeli blockade, and Arab countries must stand with Palestinian refugees. UNRWA cuts are hurting all Palestinian refugees.
UNRWA cuts come at the worst times because they come amid the coronavirus pandemic and a dire humanitarian situation. The refugees have been suffering for many years before the eyes of the international community.
The Israeli regime has been campaigning to defund the UN agency in an attempt to end the refugees' right of return. The crisis worsened after U.S. President Donald Trump decided to cancel funding to UNRWA in 2018. The crisis of Palestinian refugees began in 1948 upon the creation of the Israeli regime on occupied Palestinian land.
Palestinian refugees say that UNRWA cuts will only increase their suffering after more than 7 decades of displacement. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
And that is World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Chad Wolf, the acting Homeland Security Secretary who helped enact key pieces of the Trump administration's hardline immigration agenda, resigned on Monday, 11th of January. As the nation confronts heightened security threats after an attack on the U.S. Capitol building by supporters of the outgoing president, Chad Wolf said his exit was prompted in part by court findings that he was illegally serving in his job. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Lauren Gambino. The piece is titled, Acting U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf Resigns. Stay with us for more of Lauren Gambino's article. Chad Wolf, the acting Homeland Security Secretary who helped enact key pieces of the Trump administration's hardline immigration agenda, resigned on Monday, 11th of January. As the nation confronts heightened security threats after an attack on the U.S. Capitol building by supporters of the outgoing President Donald Trump. Chad Wolf said his exit was prompted in part by court findings that he was illegally serving in his job. Wolf said in a letter to staff at the Department of Homeland Security that he had intended to remain in office until the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden, but would instead step down at 11:59 p.m. on Monday night. His departure, he said, was compelled in part by recent events and by court rulings invalidating some of the Trump administration's immigration policies, citing findings that Wolf was illegally serving in the role. I'm saddened to take this step, as it was my intention to serve the department until the end of this administration, said Chad Wolf, who had been serving in an acting capacity since November of 2019 and was never confirmed by the U.S. Senate. A report by the Government Accountability Office, GAO, determined that Wolf's appointment to the role violated the rules of succession, and as such, he had been serving unlawfully in the role. Judges, citing that finding in court rulings to invalidate some of the policy changes enacted by the Trump administration during his tenure. On Monday, Chad Wolf cited the ongoing and meritless court rulings regarding the validity of my authority as acting Secretary of Homeland Security as a reason for stepping down. These events and concerns increasingly serve to divert attention and resources away from the important work of the department at this critical time of a transition of power he wrote. The letter does not explicitly mention last week's assault on the Capitol building, which Chad Wolf described as tragic and sickening in a statement on 7th of January. In that statement, he also called on President Donald Trump to strongly condemn the violence that had been carried out in his name and committed to staying in his position to ensure an orderly transition to a Biden administration. He is the third cabinet secretary to resign following the attack on the Capitol building. Pete Gaynor, the head of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, will take over as acting Homeland Security Secretary less than 2 weeks before the department will help coordinate security for Joe Biden's inauguration amid heightened threats of violence and protests. As a last act, Chad Wolf announced that he had authorized the U.S. Secret Service to begin enhanced security operations on 13th of January, nearly a full week before the inauguration ceremony. In light of the events of the past week and the evolving security landscape leading up to the inauguration. Before the riots, the Secret Service was due to begin implementing special security measures on the day before the inauguration on 19th of January. During his time in office, Chad Wolf was among the president's most loyal lieutenants, eagerly stepping into the spotlight to defend the administration's actions before Congress and on cable news. This summer, he became the public face of the administration's crackdown on protesters in the wake of nationwide demonstrations against police brutality and racism. Chad Wolf's decision to deploy tactical agents to detain protesters in Portland, Oregon, sparked national backlash and criticism that he was bending the department to Donald Trump's political agenda. Chad Wolf's resignation comes hours before Donald Trump is due to visit Alamo, Texas, where he will survey progress on the U.S.-Mexico border wall. I leave knowing that the Department of Homeland Security has positioned itself for an orderly and smooth transition to President-elect Joe Biden's DHS team, he wrote. Welcome them. Educate them and learn from them. They are your leaders for the next 4 years, a time which undoubtedly will be full of challenges and opportunities to show the American public the value of the Department of Homeland Security and why it is worth the investment.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, Materialistic Lifestyle. Brothers and sisters, we know that Islam is a religion that provides you with a complete code of life. Islam does not want to see you becoming all materialistic. You live in this material world, but without being materialistic. Well, when we talk about this materialistic lifestyle, these materialists, they lead unhappier lives, and they are worse to the people around them. And we will get into the reasoning of it. For now, I'm just putting forth the claims. And it seems the social media might be fueling materialistic attitudes as well. You look around, and all you see is materialism growing. We know from research that materialism tends to be associated with treating others in more competitive, manipulative, and selfish ways, as well as with being less empathetic. Materialism is associated with lower levels of well-being, less pro-social interpersonal behavior, more ecologically destructive behavior, and worse academic outcomes. It also is associated with more spending, problems, and debt. Look around in your families. Inshallah, Allah is protecting you. But look at your friends, look at your peers, look at your co-workers. How many of them are caught up in this debt cycle? They're just paying off their loans and debts. And, you know, they're working day in, day out just to be able to pay off their debts. In most cases, these debts are accumulated because of their materialistic lifestyle. The decisions that they made in the past, they were wrong decisions. And now they're stuck in this materialistic cycle. Welcome back, dear listeners. Before the break, we were discussing the cycle of materialism. How do people get stuck in debts and paying off their loans and interest, and, you know, they lose their sleep over it, right? Why does it happen? It happens because they make some wrong decisions at some point in time in their lives, and later on, they have to pay for those wrong decisions. According to research analysis, the more highly people endorsed materialistic values, the more they experienced unpleasant emotions, depression, and anxiety. The more they reported physical health problems, such as stomach aches and headaches, and the less they experienced pleasant emotions and felt satisfied with their lives. So these things are inversely proportional. You want to live a life that is, you know, a pleasant experience for you in terms of your emotion, in terms of your satisfaction from your life, you have to shy away from materialistic lifestyle. Because what materialistic lifestyle does is it captures you and it pretty much, you know, puts you in a position where you start hating your own life. The more that people watch television, for instance, the more materialistic their values become. And aren't we experiencing this today? You look at something on your television and then you go like, I want this. Then another thing on the television, I want this, right? They're even dictating your lifestyle. Materialism rises in individuals as social media use increases. Look, social media is also indoctrinating our next generation. That makes sense, right? Since most social media messages also contain advertising, which is how the social media companies make a profit. So we are surrounded with materialism, right? This is why we see that we start to become and think materialistic as well. And this is something that becomes the focus of our lives, unfortunately. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you.
a diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Trump could be charged with solicitation to commit a crime of violence, that is murder, under 18 U.S.C. Sect 373. It is a crime to solicit, command, induce, or endeavor to persuade another person to commit a felony involving the threat or use of physical force. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Marjorie Kahn Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Trump can be indicted under federal, state, and DC laws for his role in January 6th. Here's the details. The legal evidence is damning. Donald Trump should be held criminally liable for seditious conspiracy and inciting insurrection for his role in stoking the events of January 6th, when an angry mob of Trump loyalists, incited by the president himself, stormed the Capitol building to stop the congressional counting of voters for Joe Biden in the Electoral College. The mob easily breached the Capitol building, rampaged through the halls of Congress, some waving Confederate flags, terrorizing senators and Congress members. In stark contrast to the overwhelming and violent police force used against the largely peaceful Black Lives Matter protesters, there was little resistance offered by law enforcement against Trump's mostly white minions as they entered the building where Congress was meeting and tore it apart. Trump's violent backers did temporarily hold the count of votes for Biden. Five people died, and the mob of Trump supporters sprayed chemicals through lead pipes and injured more than 50 officers. Hours later, Trump released a videotaped message praising them. "We love you. You're very special." He gave them permission to go home. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is right to be pursuing efforts to remove Trump from the presidency through the 25th Amendment, but that effort hit a roadblock today as House Republicans refused to give unanimous consent to a resolution urging Vice President Mike Pence to initiate the process. That means the House will vote on the resolution, which is expected to pass easily. Even if, as expected, Pence refuses to invoke the 25th Amendment procedure, Democrats can still press ahead with efforts to impeach and convict Trump, so as to bar him from holding future federal office. In the weeks that follow, Trump may also be charged with the commission of several federal and even state crimes. After January 20th, Trump will no longer be shielded by the Department of Justice policy that a sitting president cannot be indicted. There is overwhelming evidence that Trump committed several crimes. The Constitution gives the president pardon power but says nothing about self-pardons. Trump has discussed pardoning himself. Since no president has ever done that, it is not clear whether a self-pardon would withstand a legal challenge if the Biden administration were to mount one. In any event, Trump does not have the power to pardon state crimes. Thus, wherever possible, federal cases should be filed jointly with prosecutions under D.C. law and laws in states such as Virginia and Maryland, where many Trump loyalists stayed, and in their home states as well. Trump violated 18 U.S.C. Sect 2383, which prohibits incitement of rebellion or insurrection. It provides for 10 years in prison for anyone who incites any rebellion or insurrection against the authority of the United States or the laws thereof, or gives aid or comfort thereto. If convicted of this crime, Trump shall be incapable of holding any office under the United States. The evidence cited in the pending article of impeachment also supports the criminal charge of inciting rebellion or insurrection against Trump. Trump also committed seditious conspiracy in violation of 18 U.S.C. Sect 2384 by conspiring to oppose by force the authority of the government and by force to prevent, hinder, or delay the execution of any law of the United States. Seditious conspiracy carries a 20-year prison sentence. Interrupting the counting of the electoral votes constitutes delaying the execution of U.S. law. During the January 6th siege, Rudy Giuliani left a long voicemail meant for Senator Tommy Tuberville, urging him to slow down the vote certification in the Electoral College. It reached Senator Mike Lee instead. In a 10-minute phone conversation with Tuberville, Trump implored him to make additional objections to the vote count. Trump apparently resisted calling in the National Guard, which ultimately arrived once the Capitol breach was well underway. Trump loyalists quickly found the offices of specific legislators, including Nancy Pelosi. They went directly to Representative James Clyburn, private office, which few people knew about that, leading Michael Moore to speculate that congresspersons were on the conspiracy. Giuliani, Donald Trump Jr., and Representative Mo Brooks, together with Trump, conspired to exhort the large crowd to stop the counting of votes in the Electoral College, which is a U.S. law contained in the Constitution. Over a period of several weeks, people close to Trump encouraged and advertised the wild January 6th event. Moreover, White House counsel Pat Cipollone told White House officials not to talk to Trump or assist his coup attempt so they would not be prosecuted for treason. Trump could also be charged with solicitation to commit a crime of violence, that is murder, under 18 U.S.C. Sect 373. It is a crime to solicit, command, induce, or endeavor to persuade another person to commit a felony involving the threat or use of physical force. If prosecutors can prove that whomever killed Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick was incited to violence at the rally where Trump exhorted his followers, he could be convicted of inciting murder. Legal grounds also exist for charging Trump in Georgia for having solicited Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to commit election fraud. In a January 2nd phone call, Trump bullied the Georgia Secretary of State to find 11,780 votes to overturn Biden's win in that state and threatened Raffensperger if he didn't comply. Trump can be charged with criminal solicitation to commit election fraud in Georgia state court. For months before the presidential election, Trump spewed false claims of fraud to preemptively discredit a Biden victory. Both before and after Biden won 306 electoral votes, far more than 270 required to win. Trump filed frivolous lawsuits challenging their results. Judge after judge dismissed them, and the Supreme Court refused to overturn the election. Trump pressured election officials in several states to refuse to certify duly chosen Biden electors. And he sought to disenfranchise people of color in targeted countries and jurisdictions with primarily black or brown populations. For weeks, White House staff and Trump's close allies planned and promoted the Stop the Steal protest on January 6th at the Capitol. Big protest in D.C. on January 6th, Trump tweeted on December 19th, "Be there, we'll be wild." Since Pence would be presiding over the joint session of Congress on January 6th, Trump applied tremendous pressure on him to stop the certification of Biden's electoral votes. When Pence told Trump that the Constitution gave him no such power, Trump was furious. On January 6th, Trump and his co-conspirators Giuliani, Trump Jr., and Brooks egged on the assembled crowd, urging them to march to the Capitol and stop the constitutionally mandated electoral vote count. Giuliani told the throng, "Let's have trial but combat." Trump Jr. yelled, "Stand up and fight," and threatened congressional Republicans who were not trying to overturn the election, declaring, "We are coming for you." Brooks said, "Today is the day American patriots start taking down names," adding, "Our ancestors sacrificed their blood, their sweat, their tears, their fortunes, and sometimes their lives to give us their descendants, an America that is the greatest nation in the world history." He then asked the audience if they were willing to do the same. When Trump addressed the crowd, he called the election outcome this egregious assault on U.S. democracy. He said they would stop the steal and keep the Democrats from fraudulently taking over our country. Trump advised his supporters to show strength and walk down to the Capitol, adding, "You will never take back our country with weakness." He said, "When you catch somebody in a fraud, you are allowed to go by very different rules." They followed Trump's extortion and carried out the most destructive attack on Congress and the process of democratic elections in the U.S. history. Trump's seditious conduct should result in his removal from office under the 25th Amendment, and barring that, he should be impeached. Introduced by Democratic Representatives David Cicilline, Ted Leo, and Jamie Raskin, the article alleges that Trump engaged in high crimes and misdemeanors by willfully inciting violence against the government of the United States. Shortly before the Senate and House of Representatives met to count the Electoral College votes, Trump reiterated false claims to a nearby crowd of his supporters, telling them, "We won this election, and we won it by a landslide." The article says Trump also willfully made statements that encouraged and foreseeably resulted in imminent lawless action at the Capitol. The allegations continue. In addition, the article cites Trump's prior efforts to subvert and obstruct the certification of the results of the 2020 presidential election. They include his January 2nd phone call to Raffensperger. during which Trump urged him to find enough votes to overturn Georgia presidential election results and threatened Raffensperger if he failed to do so. The article states that Trump gravely endangered the security of the United States and its government institutions, threatened the integrity of the democratic system, interfered with the peaceful transition of power, and imperiled a coordinate branch of government. Trump thereby betrayed his trust as president to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Finally, the article says, Trump will remain a threat to national security, democracy, and the Constitution if he continues in office. One way or another, Trump should be removed from office and prevented from running for president again in 2024. He must be criminally charged to ensure accountability and prevent impunity for his egregious crimes to deter future presidential lawbreaking.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of a televised speech delivered on July 31, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of Eid al-Adha.
Well, they buy less of our oil or they buy very little of it. All our previous customers do not buy enough oil. This has caused the relationship between the economy of the country and oil, which was detrimental and harmful relationship, to be undermined. This is like a practice that we can continue to do in the future as well. Of course, by oil, I mean crude oil. Otherwise, I am not opposed to selling and exporting the kind of oil that has turned into value added. What I'm strictly opposed to is the exportation of crude oil. I hope that by Allah's favor, this task will be accomplished with more follow-up measures adopted by the administration and the Majlis, as there are many capacities in the country which can replace oil and resolve our budget problems.
Your light and love, all I see. Nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord,
my Lord,
protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
Fifth point is, can the sanctions be cured or not? The answer is that they are definitely curable. The second answer is that certainly this cure does not lie in retreating in the face of the US. Some people argue and promote the notion that if we want to put an end to the US greed and bullying, we should retreat. However, this is not the case. It naturally occurs that when you retreat in the face of someone who is greedy and transgressing, he will advance. This is a natural and clear phenomena. If you retreat and give in to the US demands, he will present new demands. Today, this is what the US is saying to us. It says that we should completely abandon our nuclear industry, that we should reduce our defense capabilities to one-tenth of what they are. This is to say, we should put aside our defense missiles and resources, which have a deterring function, thus rendering ourselves defenseless, and that we should let go of our nuclear power.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.